How are you? How are you? How are you? Whoa, that's a little bit too much. Hey, let's start off the show with a tribute to the she-wolves of today. This is Freya's Day. Just a minute here. I think I had that turned up a little bit too high on that input. Yeah, let's do it right now, okay? Yeah, right here in North Central Indiana.
Sleeping single in a double bed, thinking over things I wish I'd said. I should have held you, but I let you go. Now I'm the one sleeping all alone. Oh, sleeping single in a double bed, tossing, turning, trying to forget. I could be lying with you instead. I'm sleeping single in a double bed. Drink, but I'd only be sorry, 'cause drinking doubles alone don't make it a party. Another sleepless night, and it's the same old story. When you're the only one at two in the morning, single in a double bed.
Yeah, a little bit of Barbara Mandrell there. How about that for the she-wolves out there on Freya's Day? Right. And it's Terrible Tommy back at you here on Freya's Day. It's, what is it? I got a big old speaker in front of my clock over here. I'm going to have to change those speakers. I don't need that big a speaker. Hey, it's February the 28th, 2014. And it's a new moon. Yeah, that's what I see over here, a new moon, and it was 10 degrees when I rolled out of the sack this morning, and I know because I went out to see if I could get my truck started. I have a little problem with it, and I thought maybe my battery was bad, but I guess I just left something on and ran the battery down, and it was okay, but it took off. If it takes off at 10 above or 10 below, I think the battery's all right. Yeah, right here. P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's where you send your donations for the radio show. Get your March subs in now, and we'll send you a secret passcode. That's right, your own very secret passcode. And, all right, send your snail mail to that address, too. And when you call, and when your friends call 574-267-5036, which is Tommy's private number here in the bunker, remember, don't leave telephone numbers, you know. Don't leave telephone numbers because, you know, it's almost impossible to be totally secure, that's for sure. So we don't try to tell anybody that because they know where everybody is and who they are all the time. So that's why Lone Wolf and Leaderless Resistance is so important. You can't, if you testify against yourself, that's your problem. Like old Craig's doing up there in Leith, North Dakota. He doesn't realize what he's opened himself up to. And now they're going to look into this Canadian situation. They were running it like it was a big, bad, violent hate crime, and it was just free speech. But there is no free speech in Canada. You've got more free speech in Russia today than you do in Canada. Canada's speech is somewhat like Red China. And a lot of people don't know that. Yeah, I call them, what do I call them? Forget right now. You've got one of the most anti-free speech countries in the world right on your border here, and you're saying, oh, that Canada, that's a very peaceful country. They don't give people trouble, and they, there's mostly white people up there. Well, baloney. Baloney. And also that president or premier or step and fetch it they got running the show up there, he is the most extreme anti-environmentalist you can imagine. His hero is George Bush Jr., if that gives you any idea. And they're scrapping all their programs that monitor the environment up there in Canada as fast as they can. And of course, they want to ship all that dirty, filthy, toxic tar sands down here through that little teeny pipeline that's only got one layer of covering. I mean, even on MSNBC, I was watching old, what the hell's his name, Big Mouth on there, sort of their, the progressive answer to Rush Scumbaugh. But anyhow, he has a hunting lodge up there in Canada. And he was pointing out all the restrictions on his gas supply to his hunting lodge. And the tank has to be double-walled, and they have to have concrete barriers all around it and everything else. But this pipeline they want to put down through their, through the middle of the country only is one wall. And they estimate at least 1 to 2% leakage. And that's on a good day. So anyhow, there you go. That's Canada. That's your lovely neighbor, you know. But I think some, I think the pale faces and the Mongols are getting together on this thing, because a lot of the alleged Indian tribes are up in arms too, and they should be. Everybody should be, because that old pipeline's going right through one of the most giant aquifers of fresh water in North America. And boy, I'll tell you, with the water situation the way it is now, we need all the water we can get. And luckily right now, today, they're getting quite a bit out in California. And I hope they've got some reservoirs out there that are filling up, because they're going to need it. I've got a donation of some T-shirts in here. In fact, I got quite a few here building up on me. That and the latest is a blue T-shirt that's got 14-5 on it. And I'm shipping out a couple of them today to a couple of our good buddies and good gals there. And if you send in a donation, and I'll try to use that for the inmates. I'll try to use, because these T-shirts that get donated to me, and I don't have to put out any money out of the treasury here, we'll donate that money to the inmates. So if you want a nice T-shirt, that it's not a great big 14-5 either, but it's big enough you can see it for a little way. And so we've got those, and then we got the free Matt Hale T-shirts, and there's some others back there, and it's time to, they're not doing any good in here. So, or if you want to go potpourri and just say, send me a T-shirt, Terrible Tommy, and send a donation, and I'll put that in the Aryan inmate pot. How's that? Now, don't forget, on Sunday this week, that'll be, what, the 29th, 30th? I believe that's the 30th, Sunday, at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk. I'm going to be the guest on... what is it? Ugly? Not but ugly. Oh, yeah, The Ugly Truth. And we're going to be on there with Alexander out of Moscow and Max out of Canada. And so we'll see what happened. I sent you a sample, a pre-show show the other day, so it's going to be somewhat like that, I guess. So that's at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time a.m. on Sunday coming up. 30th. I'm toying with the idea of maybe opening up another show up there on Blog Talk or one of those outfits. I don't know whether I can handle all that. Maybe I'll just run radio archive shows on it or something like that. But I'm toying with that idea because you can get 2 hours a day for a $39 fee per month. Well, it's going to be... I don't think I can do this show and do that every day, but maybe once a week or something like that. But one thing about that, you can get a lot of calls if people want to call in. But if people are not going to call in, it probably wouldn't be worth it. So anyhow, what do you think about that? Should Tommy blab some more on another medium or something here? Some people send me magazines and books and things like that, and now and then, and I get one that sends me a whole carton of stuff every couple of months, and in there she always sends me a tactical response magazine, a magazine for special enforcement. And this is for, obviously, anyone in law enforcement, not keeping the police, keeping the peace. This is law enforcement, man. All the new sexy weapons they can use on you if you get out of line and you don't obey your privilege, you know. You know, they'll just come in and kill your ass because they got all this weaponry, just like the military, I'm telling you. But I noticed one thing about all the pictures and the ads and all that in this magazine. I didn't see one colored person. I didn't see one non-white in the whole magazine. Oh, I don't know what that's all about. Maybe they just skipped it this month. Maybe next month they'll be all Afrikaners, but I mean Afrikaner blacks. But this issue on this was the July and August. Oh, this is old. This is July, August 2013. Nothing like being up to date. But anyhow, it gives all these bulletproof trucks and all this automatic machine guns and all this stuff that the cops can get to use against you if you get out of line. So anyhow, that's if you want a magazine, it's pretty interesting to keep up on that stuff. Get this Tactical Response, the magazine for special enforcement. That talk about a police state sound, that sure sounds like it to me. Well, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You know, I passed along the sad story of Craig Cobb here, and he's going down the tube as fast as he can. It says here, white supremacist Craig Cobb's bags were packed, and he said he was sorry. But he won't leave jail as expected Thursday because the judge wants more information before letting him go, which I'm sure they didn't tell him before he signed a plea agreement. How many times I got to tell you, boys, you can't trust these people. You don't talk. You don't plead out. You fight them all the way. And especially in this case, it was such a Mickey Mouse case. All he needed was one person on the jury and he'd have beat the whole thing. Cobb, 62, has been jailed on charges of terrorizing Leith resident citizens. I think I'd feel more terrorized from those wagon burners down the road that came into town half drunk and were looking for Craig here a few weeks ago. I think I would have been more terrorized by those wagon burners than on Craig. Dressed in jeans and white shirt, for what he and many others thought would be his first day of freedom since being arrested. Something you young people, you old people, all of you got to understand. That's the way it works. It's called the bait and switch. Legal bait and switch. Instead of accepting a plea agreement, South Central District Judge David Reich ordered a pre-sentence investigation and deferred the matter until he gets that report. He said he wants to know more about the hate crimes charge that Cobb fled in Canada and the terrorizing incident, which was nothing more than free speech down here in Canada. That is hate crime. That report could take weeks. Oh, Craig, I'm sorry, you're going to be, now that you've made that plea agreement, you're going to be stuck in that jail for maybe another month. So Cobb was escorted from the Burleigh County Courthouse back to Stanton Jail, where he'd optimistically packed up and signed out earlier in the day to leave the jail. You see? Okay, well, anyhow, that's enough of that. I've sent you all the nasty stuff by email, and either you've read it or you don't give a shit. But anyhow, I want this to be an example to everybody that hears my voice or reads my stuff, that you don't plea bargain, especially if you're innocent. And you don't plea to a felony if you're innocent, and you roll the dice. I mean, if we've got men who are in prison for 25, 50, and sometimes 100 years doing time that didn't plead out. And so here we got one guy that was faced with probably a maximum of a couple of years, even if they'd had on the best day with that DA up there, pleading out, and now he's in bad shape. And he's going to be in bad shape because now he's looking for another state that'll take his probation. And I don't think there's going to be another state very quick that's going to take his probation. And I'll bet you anything that it's very possible that Craig Cobb will be deported back to Canada and face hate crimes charges in Canada, which will probably give him 2 or 3 years in the slammer up there. And based upon using the case down here to inflame the court up there, he may get 5 or 10 years up there. So, plus he'll never be able to own a gun legally again, and probably he won't be able to renew his passport to go out of the country. So, essentially, Craig Cobb's career with the racial struggle is over and done. Now, somebody mentioned that he was unhappy that he had tried to financially help the guys up there. Now, Craig Cobb had money. He never needed money in jail. He had a wad of money. But his partner there, Keenan Dutton, I sent him a $20 phone card so I could find out what's going on up there, which he never called me. Well, he did one time. He got me one time. And he'd already told me he'd pled out. So I said, this conversation's over. I hung up. And also I loaned, and I sent a few, 2 or 3 law books into Craig, and I don't think he opened one of them. And during the height of that thing, I shipped him up a bulletproof vest, because those people up there are crazy. It's not Craig Cobb is crazy. It's the people up there in Leith and those crazy-ass Mongols down the road. The wagon burners were coming up there, and so I sent him that bulletproof vest, and I'll probably never get it back. But that's the extent of my investment in that situation. However, it's my information. I still own title to a lot in Leith. I'm not exactly sure. We got to check that all out. But if I do, I'll keep that damn lot until hell freezes over, and I'll build a monument up there to Bob Matthews or something made out of 3 foot thick of reinforced concrete. Yeah, or like some of the guys wanted me to do is give that lot to the Somalian group over in Milwaukee or over there in Minnesota someplace, Wisconsin or Minnesota, and on the agreement that they have to move some families in there on that lot. I think Leith deserves some Somalians. They have shown that they love black people. They've got one there, and they love him and his white wife. And so since Leith loves black people so much, I think that they should be blessed with a group of Somalians or, you know, whoever we can make this great gesture and set them up with a place, right? What do you think? Oh, if I've got a title to that lot, I think I'll be putting an ad in Craigslist and looking for Somalians or other people from deep African origins that want a new start, want a place to have a place, and they can move their little RV in there or build a little house and start having kids and populate and take over Leith. Which reminds me of that old saying, be careful what you wish for. You're liable to get it. Yeah. I just wonder how those Somalians or Ethiopians or whoever it happens to end up being, if it does, how they get along with the Mongols down the road. I wonder how that would work out as they began to copulate and have more and more kids. You think that the racial makeup of the Ethiopians and Somalians might come up against the wagon burners down the road? That'd be an interesting situation. Well, anyhow, the whole thing has got to ring through to you that we can't use normal ways of doing business. We just can't do it. Everything is blocked. The courts are screwed, and the DAs are screwed. Law enforcement at every level are going to use anything that they can get a hold of against people who unfortunately or fortunately believe in inequality. And so that's the way it is. And so those who have criticized old Terrible Tommy for promoting leaderless resistance and the lone wolf approach, I don't know what the hell you think's going to win, because you can't win at the ballot box. There's no way you can determine that. And even if you got somebody in that said they agreed with you, but immediately they got in there, they'd be bought off and go the other way anyhow. So you can't get in there. You can't get into the media in a positive way. I mean, you can't get on network TV. There's just no way that you have out. And so if you're not going to go lone wolf or leaderless resistance, well, there's nothing I can do for you. And that's the last time I venture out to pick up the pieces from a right-winger like I did again in this case. I'm not going to do it anymore. I've been burnt before, and I got to learn my lesson just to let these people paddle their own canoe, and Tommy will paddle his, okay? Oh, yeah, and another thing with that population rising in North Dakota because of the oil business that's set to befoul their environment, and they're loving it because they're going to make lots of money. Lots of money. Well, with all this increased population, the crime is going through the roof, so to speak. So to speak for North Dakota. So they got a lot more to worry about than the little Craig Cobb, and they're going to have real problems. I watched their crime page on their newspapers there in North Dakota, and it's beginning to go through the roof. Yeah, well, it's karma, man. I'm not a karma man, but maybe there is karma. You know, I don't think I commented yet on that case down in Arizona where they were passing a law to where people who found it against their religious persuasion, for certain customers to come in, they could refuse service to them. Well, on this one, I'm coming down supporting the law. Yeah, this discrimination law. Because what it's doing is putting people back in more or less the position we were in early on in this country, where there was no law against discrimination. Discrimination was the mark of a free man. A slave couldn't discriminate. Only a free man could discriminate. And so that shows you where you're at. You haven't been a free person for a long time. It started way back in California, I know, with the Rumford Fair Housing Bill, to where you had to sell your house or your property to whoever the hell came up your front door. And that right there took the freedom of ownership and control of anything away from the middle class people, white people. And so I believe that discrimination is one of the main laws of nature. And if I'm not wanted in a place, and there's been places like that, I don't go there. I don't go to a bar that's, say, all mostly black and push my way in there and say, well, I'm white, you gotta serve me. And if the black owner said, get your ass out of here, white boy, I'd get my ass out of there. And so I know people say, oh, that causes people to be offended and hurt. Well, it's not as bad as not having the ability to discriminate, because if you can't discriminate, if you don't have any natural right of discrimination, you're a slave. You cannot say, well, the land of the free, the home of the brave. Well, you can't do that, because you discriminate every day. I mean, every time you get up, you discriminate. You discriminate when you're driving down the road. I mean, you can run right through a stop sign, or you can stop and maybe live. It's just that they want to cut you off at the knees on discriminating for things that some people feel are important. I mean, if there's a Jehovah's Witness got a business out here, and Tom Metzger, well-known white racist, white supremacist, comes around and they don't want to serve me, well, fine. That's okay. I'll go down the road and see if I can find somebody else. In fact, I think it happened to me here. I had a handyman that I hired to do a little work for me about a year ago, and he did pretty good work, and I liked the guy. All of a sudden, I call him, and he don't come around. And he said, well, I'm busy on this job. And I said, fine, well, when that job's done, we'll come on back around. I got a couple of more things for you to do. And he never did. And I was at a local hardware the other day, and I saw him. And I didn't make any motions to him or anything. I wanted to see how he'd react. And I know he saw me. And he didn't say hello or anything. So somehow he's been told that I'm a bad person. And at least he's honest. I respect that. If he believes something, a philosophy that's different than mine, and he believes strongly in it, he should do that. And I'm glad he did. So I'll just have to go down the road and find myself a handyman that either agrees to disagree, or agrees to agree, or just don't give a shit. But so why don't you spread it around? You know, Tom Metzger is supporting, even though that governor down there, Brewer, she vetoed the damn bill. I was wishing they'd keep it going for a while. But it's funny that technically what that bill was doing was putting people, freeing them back up to do what they used to do for 150 years or more in this country, maybe 200 years, that they were obviously free to do. But that just shows you're not a free person. If you can't discriminate at all levels, then you're not free. You're a slave. You're just as big a slave. In fact, it's worse, because you think you're free. That's the worst part of being a slave. Now, as a black slave on the plantation, he knew what the hell his position was. There was probably a fence around him, and they had probably some overseers watching the slave quarters at night. They didn't want nobody sneaking out. He knew exactly what he was. He's a slave. But after that came wage slavery, and so people thought they were free, but they weren't free, because the ruling class were robbing their labor and keeping them at such low pay that that they were like slaves and couldn't really go, couldn't flee anywhere because they didn't have any money. So that was a clever idea, the capitalists, you know, wage slavery. So anyhow, anybody asks you, you tell them, well, Terrible Tommy says, I'm 100% for. I don't care if they're Jews and don't want Christians in, or they're Islamic and don't want Jews in. I believe in discrimination, and I'll support discrimination till my dying day. Well, I see a lot of people arguing over this Venezuelan situation, and I'm not going to really get much into it because it's such a kettle of worms, kettle of snakes. I see that Tom Hayden, oh God, Tom Hayden, I thought he was gone, but he's come out and yapping about it. Well, I think that the past president of Venezuela, even though he was a strong man, he was sort of evening up the playing field a little bit. But now they got all this oil, but the people are starving to death or having lots of problems. And any country that's got those kind of oil reserves and selling it off, and the money isn't trickling down to the poor people in the street, there's something wrong. A system has to be such. Now, I believe under the other person, it was a socialism, but evidently it wasn't very well worked out, socialism, to where the funds from the ruling class got spread around a little bit. Yeah, so anyhow, I'm not going to get into that now because you're dealing with a mixed-race country, and probably the ruling class is pretty white, but they're not my kind of white, I'll tell you that. I was watching an old black-and-white movie last night from back in the 40s, and it was Marlene Dietrich, who was actually a traitor to Germany, her country, but I won't go into that any more than to say she was. But she was a good actress, but she pursued art more than she pursued patriotism to her people. Anyhow, there was a film about prior to the Russian Revolution and the way the monarchy and the ruling class were living. And then there was the revolution, and back and forth. It was quite a film, black and white. And it was interesting to me that every time, if the white army would get in control, they lined people up against the wall and shot them because they thought they were, or maybe they were Reds, okay? And every time the Reds got back in control, they'd line the people who they thought were the, bourgeois, and shoot them. So you couldn't hardly win. Everybody was in the middle of this thing, you know. If you weren't being shot by one group, you're shot by another. But anyhow, it was a very interesting film, and the tremendous struggle and everything. But one thing I pointed out, even on that radio show with The Ugly Truth the other day, that, behind every revolution, there's cause, you see. You can't just say, well, those dirty, rotten Reds and Jews took over. Because, these Jews are Jews, Bolsheviks, who were like parasites, like cockroaches. They saw an opening and they went for it. And that's what happened. The ruling class in Russia were living the lives of splendor. And if you'll go back and look at the paintings and pictures of the day, you'll see they lived in mansions. They had the best food, the best clothing, like Europe and everything. It was they had it made. They liked it that way too. And so, when there becomes too much of a distance between the ruling class and the poor, something's got to give. Just like the French Revolution. So I say, you read books all the time criticizing the revolution in Russia and even the Bolsheviks, of course. But you got to understand, there's a cause for this kind of stuff. The French Revolution is a cause. I've read Nesta Webster's works on the French Revolution 25-30 years ago, and I said, oh boy, those revolutionaries were bad people. Look what they did. But revolution breeds excess. and disparity in finance and income among the people breeds revolution and excess. And once it starts, don't be shocked when people are decapitated and disemboweled and everything that happens, because there's always excesses. Now, if you don't want that kind of stuff, like I've said to the Jews, I said, if you don't want genocide, don't have war. If you hadn't had World War I that led to World War II, you Jews would have been in a lot better shape, but you were busy financing and reaping the profits of Germany when it was on its knees, and then Russia too, and all that kind of stuff, and it come back to bite you in the ass. At least it bit the poorer classes of the Jews in the ass. I don't think there's much of a record that the very wealthy Jews were treated real badly, because I do know that there were trainloads of the wealthy Jews with all their goodies and everything else filling entire trains that were getting out of Germany, and they never got sent to the camps. And so and people say, oh, that's bullshit. No, it's true, because we have witnesses that saw the trains coming through the stations there, headed for the west, full of Jews, full of all their goodies and their fur coats and everything, because they were had the windows open. They were looking out and waving and all that kind of stuff. So they beat their ass off and got over to New York City or London or anywhere else they could hide. And so that's always bothers me when, you know, people say, we got to clean out these people, but they start at the bottom. That always bothers me. I think in any kind of a situation where you got a problem in a country, the corruption's at the top. And you got to stop with the top and just start knocking them off until it gets down to the point where things are back to normal. But to start at the bottom to knock people off, you know, and then you never get to the top. And then it starts all over again. So you're going to see it in this country. Now watch it. There are going to be people trying to engineer that mass killings of mestizos or mass killings of blacks and that kind of stuff, and the blacks and so forth, and being given the same kind of a thing to get whitey. But you're missing the point. The corruption's at the top. And if you see people and groups and organizations that are not going for the top, then you're either following ignorant people or people who have a definite design in mind that they're not going to change anything. They're just going to shift it from one group of ruling class to another, right? Okay. You know, this outfit, Al Jazeera, when they first got started and they were just in the Middle East and they were giving us news over from over there, I thought they were doing a pretty damn good job and got a lot of information we didn't get on American TV. But now they got Al Jazeera America, and it's just like it's the same race-mixing bunch of crap that the other networks give out. So they're always crying over black people and all this kind of stuff. And I don't mind a little bit of that, but they run it into the ground. I don't see anybody crying over white workers, you know that? I'm afraid that Al Jazeera is something not to pay much attention to. It's the same old usual cast of, what do you call it, what's that movie? Anyhow, the usual criminals. You know, I still get a lot of people sending me stuff, but I'm trying to drag me back into the Christ insanity situation, and I'm not going. I've been there, done that, explored every avenue there is possibly to explore, and I decided that's not for me. And I got to thinking, I said, you know, really, the Jews are extremely clever and smart, at least the people at the top who make the decisions. They said, to hell with this worshiping somebody else's God. We're going to create our own God. And they did. They created their own God, and their God was themselves. So the Jews worship themselves as a God. So you got to understand that. And it's perfect. It's beautiful. you got to hand it to them. They said, well, piss on these other gods that these other people have come up with. We're going to invent our own God, and actually it's that God is us. So that's what Arians should do. I mean, we should invent our own type of God and worship ourselves, because if not us, who else? I mean, we're the only, it's the only people that are going to do anything and straighten anything out is ourselves. And any problem we've got is our own problem. And can't blame it on some mystical spook in the sky. So next time you're thinking about the Jews, say, man, that was pretty damn smart of those Jews to create something and then worship themselves and call it Yahweh. Well, let's go down to Nashville and see what's going on. Friday marks the end of the two-week period within which U.S. Senator Bob the Asshole Corker promised Volkswagen would announce another line at his factory in Tennessee if the workers there rejected representation by the United Auto Workers Union. In other words, selection, you know, labor selection. Let's see here. So far, there's little sign of any pending announcement. Gee, Corker, you wouldn't lie, would you? Republicans and Democrats never lie. Workers at the Chattanooga plant ended up voting 712 to 626 against the UAW in an election the union claims was tainted by threats and intimidations from Republicans like Corker, Governor Bill Haslam, and state lawmakers. Well, no, it was by stupid white workers. 626 stupid white workers that came up with all kinds of excuses to vote against the union. Now, many of those excuses were probably based on correct information, that there is always corruption in any big outfit. And so a union has corruption just like the corporations have corruption. But I'm going to tell you something. You're better off dealing with the corruption in the union than you are the corruption in the corporation, because the corruption in the corporation is tied directly to the government, and they can really be corrupt. Yeah. The UAW last week filed a challenge with the National Labor Relations Board, whoopee, seeking to have results voided and a new election to be held. Well, don't hold your breath for that. The appeal cited warnings from the GOP lawmakers, that's the property party, the money party, that a pro-union vote would endanger key state incentives to secure a new line at the plant. And Corker's statements that a vote against the union would be followed in short order by expansion announcement. Quote, if the UAW is voted down, they're going to come here immediately within two-week period and affirm they're going to build a line here, unquote, Corker told the Associated Press the day before the conclusion of the three-day vote. Well, those 626 people that voted the other way were just plain stupid, if you'll believe a congressman or a senator. They're all liars. Yeah. Some lie more than others, but they're all liars. The senator also dismissed the repeated claim by Volkswagen that a decision about whether to build a new SUV either in Chattanooga or at the plant in Mexico was unrelated to the union vote. Quote, there's no way I'd put out a statement like that I put out unless I was 1,000% sure that it was accurate in every way, Corker said at the time, as his nose grew longer and longer. In its appeal, the UAW criticized the statements from Corker and other GOP politicians during the election. This resonates as a classic fist inside the velvet glove threat, the UAW appeal said. Quote, if you vote against the union, you'll be rewarded, but if you go the other way, you'll be punished. Senator Corker knew exactly what he was doing, according to the filing. Well, of course he did. I mean, I can't believe that 626 people, working people, would vote against selective bargaining. collective bargaining. I can't believe it. I mean, it's just, that gives you a little idea of maybe they're right about the mentality south of the Mason-Dixon line. Maybe, you know, we did kill off the cream of the crop in the rebellion. Yeah, you know, we seriously damaged the gene pool in the South with the Civil War. There's no doubt about that. Conversely, millions of whites were pouring in here from Germany and Ireland and all over the place in Europe, strengthening the gene pool in the North and tearing it down in the South. People who think that these things don't have lasting effects and don't go on into the future, well, you better think twice, because whenever you have these giant wars and you kill off millions of people, 55 million people in World War II, and I think about the same in World War I, you are gutting the gene pool, especially in Europe, which we're more concerned with, and the United States. You don't come back from that. I mean, it would take hundreds of years, if ever, to come back from that. Just remember that the next time one of these asshole Republicans say, well, we got to go save the humanity in this country because things ain't going just exactly the way they think it should. And so you tell your boys to go over there and get their balls blown off and their arms blown off and their legs blown off. And then you come back and put ads on TV for to donate to the Wounded Warriors. Which every time I see those ads, I almost get physically sick. I hope you listened to the show the other day where we had that, wasn't too long of a recording of this person who was talking about how we're becoming a totally wired society, to where our attention is always on the media 24 hours a day, in which he went on to say that this is a result of transnational corporatism and the way it's moving, that if you're not into that, if you're not connected to that, you're the enemy. Yeah, you will be automatically the enemy no matter what you do. If you're living off the grid, and which a lot of people are, and you're not totally connected into this monstrosity system that's been developed through the corporations, then you will be automatically classed as the enemy because you're an outsider. So get ready for that, boys and girls. This from Talkwalker, which is the most efficient way to collect and analyze masses of data for security purposes? When they say masses of data, the data is on you. Paul Brailsford, counterterrorism and OSINT professional who served 23 years in the UK, Britain's military intelligence, demonstrates how a social media monitoring tool can be applied as an OSINT operations source platform. The benefits powerful and cost effective. Well, I guess to the corporate dictatorship it is. He illustrates his theory with real life examples of relevant and targeted information relating to counterterrorism, criminal and political open sources. Everything is gradually being funneled into the heading of terrorism. I mean, you know, the thing there in Leith is a perfect example of it. Now the law, if anybody screams terrorism, you get drug into court. And so that's the way it's moving, to where only takes one person to say, I was terrorized. That man terrorized me. And away you go. And so all of this collecting of information on counterterrorism, criminal, and a criminal will soon be people who don't want to live under a dictatorship and try to live off the grid and all that kind of stuff. These will be automatic criminals. And so they're gathering the information, boys and girls, so you might as well be right out in the open because they know everything anyhow. I know I don't hide anything. Really, I don't. I say what I think and say it pretty loudly. And everybody knows it. I've figured out a long time ago there's not much use trying to be secret. Whether it's encryption or what it is, if you got something that could land you in the hoosegow real quick, then you don't talk about it. And you don't put it on a computer. You don't call on a telephone. In fact, if you're a lone wolf, it's just you, baby. And you don't have to talk to anybody about it. And you don't have to have a file cabinet. You don't have to have a computer to do it. It's in your brain, you know. You walk around with your computer, your brain, and that's where you keep all those nasty ideas. Boy, they're having a big problem with racism and anti-Semitism, anti-Jewism over there in Europe as they are here. The World Jewish Congress president, Ronald Lauder, said, quote, they suspended a guy, and I think he was a black guy, for saying something anti-Jewish, a sports guy, football guy. This suspension and fine show without a doubt that anti-Semitic, racist, or ethnically derogatory gestures will not be tolerated in the European soccer. So if you go to a soccer game in Europe, watch what you do with your hands. Because it's like going to an auction. And I used to go with my dad to the cattle auctions all the time. And I go to auctions here. And if they know you real well and you're a person who bids every once in a while, if you scratch your nose the wrong way, you just bought something. So now they're going to have it if you go to a soccer game, if you happen to put your middle finger up to scratch your nose, they're going to get your ass and haul you off, boy. Quote, the use of racist and anti-Semitic gestures or chants by European soccer players and crowds is a serious problem and brings shame on the continent, unquote. Well, I didn't know you could shame a continent. You know, how can you shame a continent? Well, you have why don't you have freedom of choice? If you don't like a player, say it, you know, so what? That's freedom. That is freedom and liberty. He made a bad play, that asshole. They should fire him and give him the old Bronx cheer and a middle finger. And that's freedom. Everybody sitting in the stands with their hands in their pockets so they won't make a bad gesture or be falsely accused of making a last gesture. That is slavery. And you either be a slave or not. So I don't go to soccer games myself. I'm not a big in fact, I'm not a sports fan at all. Except for an occasional boxing match or, tough man operation where it's one man against another. Or even a golf game once in a while that's one guy or one gal pitted against the pack. That's the way I like it. Or a boxing match with one guy against another guy. I don't like this team shit where you can blame everything on the other teammate. Well, he lost the game because he didn't do right. I did perfectly, but he didn't do right. Yeah, that I don't like that. Yeah, the European Jewish Congress, which represents kike communities throughout Europe, said they applauded the FA's commission over there in Europe's decision to sack this player, but remain concerned that Anelka, it's hard to pronounce his name, I'm pretty sure he's black or Islamic, had never apologized. Well, hang him, and put him on the village square because he did what he did and he didn't apologize. I respect anybody who does that, you know. That apologizing all the time is a real, denotes weakness. Not every time, but most of the time. Over here, these politicians, everything, they're always making a comment or something, you know. I didn't really mean it, and I pray that you'll forgive me. That's bullshit. Hey, are we about done with this Black History bullshit? I thought it was 1 month, but it looks like it's Black History Year, according to TV and the movies and everything. And you wait and see. Now, my favorite movie was Nebraska with Bruce Dern, which was almost all white and told a beautiful story. But this 12 Years a Slave, I'll bet you anything, wins the Oscar. Because the Jews will say, it's got to win the Oscar. And that's the way it'll be. And so we get niggerboarded every day of the year, 24 hours a day now. I mean, it's not like it used to be. The president yesterday come out and he's going to help all these non-white boys. I didn't see any white boys in the crowd, but he's going to earmark a whole bunch of money to uplift the downtrodden young Schwarzers. Yeah, so it's going to be nigger boarding from here on in, boys and girls. You might as well get used to it. And believe me, it's not for the good of the blacks either. Don't let them kid you. It's just a method they use to consolidate power and make more money. But there's always a money factor behind all this kind of stuff and cheap labor and all that kind of stuff. So don't get excited. They don't really care about blacks or Mexicans or anybody else. They only care about themselves and the profits they make and the beautiful lifestyle they live. Well, I'm about to give you a treat for this week, or a treatment, as they used to say when they sold cigarettes on TV. I'm going to play a little bit from a dirty, rotten, progressive liberal here for you. You know, those people that the Republicans say, and the conservatives say, don't ever listen to those people. They lie. They always lie. The other side says the same thing. But it's going to be a little bit on the environment. Take a few minutes. If you don't care if your kids have three eyes and your dog turns fluorescent green and shit comes out of your faucet when you want to get a drink of water, well, don't listen to this, okay?
On pharmaceutical heroin, that would be OxyContin and such, the price of real heroin has gone up. At the same time, there is so much street heroin available that users find they can buy high-grade product for half the price of a prescription. High quality is, ironically, also the cause of death, since it can be much more potent from one supplier to the next, which catches the users by surprise. What a mess, Ollie. And from Paz in Australia, listening tonight, today, tomorrow, it's tomorrow there, Paz writes to me from the future. Mike, have you heard about our little Fukushima here in Victoria, Australia? Hazelwood coal-powered plant. It's open-cut coal mine. I guess he means open, we would call open-pit coal mine. It's been burning for the last two weeks. The country fire authority is continuing to put it out, but it could burn for months. Privatization caused the constant wetting of the site to be stopped, and now we have this problem. Government and media are playing it down, but locals who have not yet been evacuated from nearby Morwell, Australia, population 20,000, and other towns in the area are getting sick from prolonged exposure to carbon monoxide and other toxic fumes. Some residences live within 600 miles from the coal mines, or 600 meters, I'm sorry, from the coal mines. Morwell, the town, already considered one of the unhealthiest places on Earth, highest rate of respiratory disease in the world, even before these fires started. Look at Morwell, M-O-R-W-E-L-L, on Google Earth, and find the open pit mines. They are huge. One should keep an eye on this. Imagine the tar sands pit in Canada catching fire due to some freak heat wave up in Canada or wherever. Cheers, Mike. Paz in Oz. Yeah, look it up on Google Earth. Morwell, Australia. M-O-R-W-E-L-L. And regarding Australia, an article that talks about the anthropogenic climate disruption, you know, global warming caused by humans. Way deep in the article, I found this. Meanwhile, Australian government authorities recently approved a project that will dump dredged sediment near the Great Barrier Reef, which is a World Heritage Site, to create one of the world's largest coal ports. Also on the front lines of the coal industry, miners now want to ignite, that's in Australia, back here, miners now want to, not the workers, but the mine owners, want to ignite deep coal seams, set them on fire. This is exactly what Oz just wrote about, or Paz just wrote about, to capture the gases created from the fires to use for power generation. It's called underground coal gasification. And this is on deck for what comes next after the fracking blitz. And it's a good idea for those wishing to turn Earth into Venus. Then we have BP's so-called Energy Outlook for the Future, an annual report where the oil giant BP plots trends in global energy production and consumption. With this, we can expect nothing less than full steam ahead when it comes to vomiting as much carbon into the atmosphere in as short a time as possible. The CEO of BP, Bob Dudley, announced at a January press conference that his company's outlook sees carbon emissions projected to rise 29% by 2035. Well, at least there's an element of honesty there. Of course, if the BP CEO says 29%, it probably means 49. A little bit more on that when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Talking about this recently approved project in Australia. The Australian right-wing government has approved this, a project that is going to dump dredged sediment near the Great Barrier Reef to create one of the world's largest coal ports. Now, Australia produces a lot of coal, and I guess this is where the big boats will come in and take the load. But right near, they couldn't have been anywhere else except near the Great Barrier Reef. Oh, well, it's dying anyway, right? Just like the Gulf of Mexico is essentially dead. And the article that I was quoting from talked about the coal industry now wants to ignite, set fire to deep coal seams, set them on fire, capture the gases created from the fires to use for power generation. It's called underground coal gasification. And you know, I just read this this email from Paz, or Paz, down in Oz, in Australia, talking about this enormous fire that's an open pit mine down there. It's been burning for 2 weeks now. And how it's making everybody sick. Underground coal gasification, and the author of this, Dar Jamail, this was from Truth Out, he posted it Monday, yesterday. The title is The March of Anthropogenic Climate Disruption, or ACD. Anyway, in that article, Dar talks about coal gasification. And he says, then we have BP's Energy Outlook. The CEO, Bob Dudley of BP, says in a January press conference that BP sees carbon emissions projected to rise 29% by 2035. Those are his words. And speaking of BP, Dar writes, the corporate-driven government of the United States continues to serve its masters well. The U.S. State Department recently released its environmental impact statement that found, quote, no major climate impact, end quote, from a continuation in the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline. A pipeline, as you all know, that will transport tar sands oil, the dirtiest fossil fuel on Earth, produced by the most environmentally destructive fossil fuel extraction process ever known. And as Dar writes, U.S. President Barack Obama claims he has yet to make it to the pipeline, but we can guess what his decision will be. And in late January, the U.S. House Energy and Commerce Committee voted down an amendment that would have stated conclusively that ACD is occurring. Remember, ACD is anthropogenic climate disruption, man-made global warming. The House Energy Committee voted down an amendment that would have stated conclusively that ACD is occurring, despite recent evidence that ACD has literally shifted the jet stream, the main system that helps determine all of the weather in North America and Northern Europe. And the 24 members of that committee who voted down the amendment, all of them Republicans, are more overtly honest about who they're working for than is Obama. They have accepted approximately $9.3 million in career contributions from oil, gas, and coal industries. Dar concludes by writing, the fact that the planet is most likely long past having gone over the cliff when it comes to passing the point of no return regarding ACD is a fact most people prefer not to contemplate. And who can blame them? The relentless onslaught of distressing signals from the planet, coupled with the fact that the governments of the countries generating the most emissions are those marching lockstep with the fossil fuel industries, are daunting, to say the least. Oil, gas, and coal are the fuels the capitalist system uses to generate the all-important next quarterly profit on the road toward infinite growth as required by the capitalist system. Systemic problems require systemic solutions, and thinking the radical change necessary to preserve what life remains on the planet is possible without the complete removal of the system that is killing us is futile. Did you get that? Trying to compromise and say, well, you know, we just have to modify things. We got to tighten up on the regulations. We got to make the coal industry stop blowing the tops off mountains. We gotta get the fracking industry to dial it back a little bit. If we're gonna extract the tar sands poison, then we're gonna have to make sure the pipelines are secure. No, that does not, will not, cannot work. And as Dar points out, systemic problems require systemic solutions. We've talked about this before. If we are serious, by we, I mean the human species, if we are serious about life continuing on this planet, and I know that sounds very dramatic, doesn't it? Can't you just hear the right-wingers going, oh, for Christ's sake? And the Armageddonists going, yeah, bring it on. We want Jesus. But if we're to survive at all, then what's required is a complete removal of the system. This is what deep green resistance is all about. This is what so many writers who have been trying to enlighten us about this have tried to tell us. You know who they are? Capitalism cannot be controlled, not at this point. It's impossible. They are in control. So, what to do? Your imagination is greater than my vocabulary, I'm sure, so I will leave it up to you and me and anyone who wants to fantasize about what has to be done in order to stop this. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. 2014, it's in Honolulu. And these various scientists were there, and they have been tracking this radioactive plume ever since the disaster in 2011. And the report indicates that so far, only minute traces of radioactive pollution from the Japanese power plant have been recorded in Canadian continental waters. And the scientists agree this is going to increase as the contaminants disperse eastwards on Pacific currents. Now, that's the bad news. Here's the good news. Scientists, I guess this is good news. You know, you get it where you can find it, right? Scientists stress that even the peak measurements of this radioactivity will be well within the limits set by safety authorities. So not to worry. Researchers from the Bedford Institute of Oceanography have been sampling waters ever since the Fukushima event. Been sampling waters along a line running almost 2,000 kilometers due west of Vancouver, British Columbia. And by June of last year, they were detecting quantities of radioactive cesium-137 and 134 along the sampling line's entire length. Now, the radioactivity concentrations apparently remain extremely low, less than one becquerel per cubic meter of water. And even though it remains that low, the scientists have started to validate two models that are being used to forecast the probable future progression of this plume of radioactivity, or radioactive stuff. You know what I mean? One of the models anticipates a maximum concentration by mid-2015 of up to 27 becquerels per cubic meter of water. The other model anticipates no more than about 2 becquerels per cubic meter of water. So there's quite a difference there, wouldn't you say? A spokesperson from the Bedford Institute of Oceanography, one Dr. John Smith, told the BBC News that further measurements are being taken in the ocean right now, and that should give researchers a fair idea of which model is correct. And the scientist said, quote, these levels are well below, both of them, maximum permissible concentrations in drinking water in Canada for cesium-137. The allowed limit is 10,000 becquerels per cubic meter of water. And they're talking about 27, not 1,000, just 27. So, Dr. Smith says it's clearly not an environmental or human health radiological threat. And he was joined on this panel discussing Fukushima by one Dr. Ken Busselaire from the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. And that scientist described the citizen science effort now underway to record radioactivity in beach waters of the western United States. Here's the deal. Members of the public are being recruited to regularly gather water samples from California to Washington State and in Alaska and Hawaii. So far, no cesium-134 has yet been detected. Cesium-137 is in the environment already as a result of the A-bomb tests in the 50s and 60s. There's no way out of this. However, Dr. Busselaire expects a specific Fukushima signal to be evident very shortly in U.S. waters. And this is a part that is just unnerving to me. The sampling project, which is organized at the website OurRadioactiveOcean.org, if you want to check it out, OurRadioactiveOcean.org, the sampling project is having to be funded through private donation because no U.S. federal agency has picked up the monitoring responsibility. You understand? Why bother, right? Capitalist America, they don't give a rat's ass. What, there's some radiation coming? Oh, who cares? Busselaire said, what we have to go by right now are models, And as Dr. Smith showed, these predict numbers as high as 30 becquerels per cubic meter of water. So we're going to have to continue to monitor. And but the stunning part to me is that the monitoring is being done by private citizens, which is okay, but there's no funding, no oversight by any government scientific agency. Well, they've probably been instructed by their corporate masters not to oversee it. We'll be right back.
Well, that'll give you something to think about over the weekend. Yeah. And now you can call up all those right-wing leaders and tell them, you know what that Metzger's doing, that dirty Bolshevik? He's borrowing stuff and taking stuff from these dirty, rotten progressives now. I always knew he was a red. Yeah, right. Well, we're going to go wherever we have to go to get the information. So if anybody in the right wing doesn't like that, they can kiss my white ass. 14-5.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds if we're together? Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails to you.
Fourteen-five.